Good afternoon. The Conference Committee on House File 890, E12 Omnibus Education Finance Bill will come to order. I want to thank the Conference Committee members and the public for their patience. But our plans today in convening is that we have a DE amendment to House File 890, and it was posted earlier today, and so there are copies out here, and is it available online as well? And our plans are to walk through the provisions of that DE amendment. We'll have nonpartisan staff do that. And then we will walk through the change item sheet, which members should have. That is the smaller landscape piece of paper. And then perhaps a few items from the tracking sheet if need be for any questions. It is not my plan to take public testimony, but with the exception of the Commissioner of Education, who has asked to share her thoughts with us, which we will do. And then after that, committee discussion, and then a vote on the DE amendment. And that is our business here for today. And so with that, I'd like to just make a few comments about the DE amendment. And I want to thank very much. I just want to thank very much Senator Nelson and the Senate conferees, as well as the House conferees. I think we are bringing forward an amendment that combines the best of both the House and the Senate proposals. Our target is now just a little bit higher than House or Senate was. If you look at the sheet when we get to that, is $303,533,000, so we're up a bit. And we shared many common priorities. I think the strongest one is obviously an increase to the education formula and making sure that we could devote maximum dollars to that. And so the House has agreed that that is our strongest priority. And so there is a 1.5% increase in the formula with all of the various categories linked to that. And so combined, if you look at the amount that we're spending in this bill over base, this formula funding increase fully linked represents more than 90% of our joint target. So that shows you where our priorities have been placed. I also want to thank the Senate very much for continuing our commitment to proven early learning strategies to increase our early learning scholarships and directing those to Pathway 1 to empower parents to choose the best programs suited for their young children and the needs of their families. The House agreed to make permanent the conversion of voluntary pre-K to school readiness. And the current program participants will be held harmless. So for their current year funding for the voluntary pre-K, all of those dollars will be provided back to those school districts in full at 100%, both years of this biennium and into the TALES. And they will have the flexibility offered through the school readiness program language with those dollars. So we're going to assure from this model that children that benefit the most from early learning programs of quality will be first in line to receive them. Our bill also provides nearly $5 million in mental health grants to our intermediate school districts. Again, this was a House provision, but I know the Senate agreed this was a high priority for serving, I think, some of our neediest children in these level four special education settings, and I'm very thankful that we were able to reach agreement on that, which is represented in this DE amendment. We continue to, on our efforts to recruit and train more teachers. The teacher licensure provisions have been set aside. For now, they are a separate conference committee of Senator Pratt and Representative Erickson working on that. But the funding for that new teacher licensure structure is funded in this bill. And so we are providing for that. And we also provide additional funding for Q, Grow Your Own, alternative teacher preparation, and some non-conventional training programs to make sure we're getting at people who may be interested in teaching and hopefully diversifying our teacher workforce as part of those efforts. Finally, I just wanted to thank the Senate with our thoughts and compromise represented in, again, the DE amendment for the language to repeal LIFO, to pass Aaron's Law to try to protect children from child sexual abuse, efforts to ensure our schools' water supplies are free of lead contamination for our children, and many, many other important priorities. And with that, I would like to call in Senator Nelson for her comments.
Thank you, Chair Loon. It's been a great time that we've invested in our state's really most important resource, which are our children and their educations. And Chair Loon listed really many of the highlights of the bill, and I'll just add maybe some overarching thoughts and themes to that. When we started, we talked about really five key elements that can really help ensure that all kids are prepared for tomorrow's jobs and workforce and sustainable jobs and careers. And so you'll see that this bill focuses a lot on early learning. And, of course, we know that's important that kids are ready for kindergarten when they get there. So you'll see significant investments there. You also will notice that we have focused on early literacy, and the literature and the data is replete that kids need to be reading well by the end of third grade, and you'll see early literacy provisions in this bill as well. And we know the importance, and we're seeing it more every day, about career and tech education, and you will see career and tech education innovations and investments in this bill, and things that we think can actually grow as well in the career and tech education aspect. And then we know that one of the things that is hampering our students is the high cost of higher education. And we can address that in K-12 education by making sure that as many students as are able to participate in dual enrollment, things like PSEO, AB, IB, concurrent enrollment. And you will see important and strategic investments there. They not only pay great results in high school achievement, graduation rates, and GPAs, but also in college rates as well, and of course it helps lower that tuition. And then sprinkled throughout, you're going to see innovations where we are capturing today's innovative technologies to deliver learning in new ways, and sometimes things like Senator Pratt's bill regarding not needing a first class stamp on some of the requirements. You also, I don't think, will find mandates. We tried very hard to not place further unfunded mandates on our schools. And then, as Representative Loon noted, the workhorse of education funding is that per pupil formula. And you will notice that that's where the majority of our funds have been spent. That's what our school districts, where school districts have the most flexibility to meet individual needs, and also the fairness that goes with that. So as we walk through the bill, you'll see, I think you'll see these different highlights or overarching themes that can really help us. And also, just to add, I think it was, we didn't necessarily plan this. We didn't know exactly I didn't know exactly what the Senate bill was going to look like, and I'm thinking probably Rep. Loon did not know exactly what her House bill would look like. But I would say the two fit together very well for the final package. And so I think they married together well and will give us a great start as we start negotiating with the governor on how we can even improve this bill that we, or this delete all amendment that we think will pass or will work through today. But we think things can also, will get better as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator Nelson. So with that, I would move the DE2 amendment to House File 890. And members, you should all have a copy at your places. And I think what we'll do is to start going through what the changes would be, is to perhaps start with the spreadsheets and then go with the numbers, and then we will do the language summary. So, Ms. Adrian.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Ms. Larson and I are going to walk through this one-page document that you have that shows, it says at the top, it's the conference committee change items for May 2nd, 2017. And then there you should also have the bigger tracking sheet that has a little bit more in-depth information, and we can refer back and forth if there are questions on specific provisions. But if, and then just to make note that there, so these are all of the change items that the House and the Senate agreed to put into this DE amendment, and then the article that each program, new spending for each program, is in the column that's the second from the left, and then it gives the years for 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21. And so the first item is the formula increase. So the agreed upon number was 1.5% increase for both years. That amount includes the relinking. The House originally had delinked ECFE and compensatory. And so now this is all programs are fully linked. So it would include for ECFE gets an increase of just a little over $2 million for the biennium. Compensatory also increases by about $26 million for the biennium as well. And on the, I wanted to make one other note that there, and this will be talked through, I believe, with the language, but there, we don't have that separate line for the compensatory extended time anymore, but there is a portion of the compensatory that goes with the formula is set aside for an extended time provision that came from the original House bill. And the amounts for that would be about $9.3 million in the first year for 2018, and then about almost $20 million in 2019. And then on line three, these are the compensatory pilot grants, for an increase of $9.268 million in the first biennium and then $10 million in the tails. The Prairie Lakes provision, this is the one that it's additional extended time revenue for a summer program for students who are placed at the Prairie Lakes Education Center or the Lake Park School in the Wilmer School District. There is still a pupil transportation adjustment similar to what was originally suggested in the House. It's just a smaller amount, so this is $3.8 million in the first biennium and then $4 million in the tails. The graduation incentives for $25,000 in 2018. With the conveyance of crosswinds, there is there are two items. Ms. Larson will refer to one of the savings items later in this sheet, but this one it's an additional cost for the students who would be leaving crosswinds and then would be placed in a different school district, presumably the St. Paul School District. So just a little bit of additional cost for those students. $640,000 in the first biennium. On line eight, the African American Registry at a little bit of a smaller amount, $100,000 each year just in the first biennium. The Ag Educators Program, $250,000 each year. Alternative Teacher Prep Program, this one is now $750,000 in 2018 only. The Q program, the Collaborative Urban Educator Program, will get $220,000 for each year. The Senate provision for the Concurrent Enrollment Teacher Training Grants, this one will be funded at $375,000 annually. On line 13, this is the cancellation of money in 2017, so that a program can extend the amount of time that they have to use that money. So for Education Innovation Partners, it's a cancellation of the funding in 2017 so that they can spend that same amount in 2018. On line 14, this was another Senate provision. It's the Foster Kids Educational Stability Program, and that will be funded at $1 million in 2018. The Grow Your Own Paraprofessional Program that I believe both bills carried, this will have $500,000 annually. The Intermediate School District Mental Health Grants, and this is just for the 18-19 biennium, just under $5 million. On line 17, the Math Corps program receives an increase of $250,000 annually. The Minnesota Center for the Book program gets funding in the current biennium for $50,000 each year. This is the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations on line 19. This is additional funding, but only in the tails. So they will have $43,000 each year. On line 20, the museums and education centers receive an increase of $59,000. That will go, $50,000 of it will go to the Minnesota Children's Museum, the location in Rochester, and then an additional $9,000 for the Children's Museum overall. On line 21, the statewide regional partnership, this is a program that was previously referred to as the Northwest Partnership, and it will receive $375,000 each year. The Principals Academy will be funded at $50,000 each year. On line 23, this I believe was a Senate provision, and charter school lease aid to allow PSEO children to participate, and it's an increasing amount, but $367,000 in the first biennium, and then $443,000 in the second. Reading Corps receives an additional $500,000 each year in the first biennium, and then an additional $1.5 million each year in the tails. The recovery program grants receive an increase of $250,000 each year. Rock and Read was in the original House bill, and they will get $500,000 in 2018 for the program. On line 27, the Senate had a provision for rural career and technical education. The funding is $1.5 million each year in the first biennium, and then $3 million each year in the tails. Santa Foundation was a provision in the House bill, and this is $1 million in 2018. Another cancellation and reappropriation for the SMSU Special Ed Teacher Program. So $253,000 will be canceled and then reappropriated so that the program has more time to spend the funds. The AP IB STEM grants, $250,000 each year. Starbase STEM program has a cancellation amount of $898,000 so that they can use that in the 18-19 biennium. The Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program, this was a House provision, and they, so the recommendation is to spend $500,000 in 2018. And then, Madam Chair, I think Ms. Larson is going to take it from there.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Adrians. Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Adrians. Continuing on to line 33, the Max Effort Early Repayment Aid Incentive is extended to the Kelleher School District. This was part of a package last session, and Kelleher ended up making the cutoff for repaying their bonds. However, they were not included in that original appropriation, so this would be extending that aid to the Kelleher School District at $150,000 per year. Line 34, the school readiness voluntary pre-K replacement, as Chair Loon mentioned, as part of the voluntary pre-K repeal, the district's currently receiving voluntary pre-kindergarten aid would be held harmless at the fiscal 2017 level, and instead they would be receiving school readiness dollars in the amount of their voluntary pre-K aid for fiscal year 2018-19 biennium. This would be approximately $45.6 million. Line 35, the early learning scholarships would be increased by $19 million in the 18-19 biennium and $20 million in the tails. Line 36, the parent-child home program would be increased by $1.1 million per biennium. Line 37, this is the education partnerships. In the Toledo amendment, the House and Senate agreed to the tiered tiered structure. So this would be a tier one for the Northside Achievement Zone and the St. Paul Promise neighborhood. They would each receive an additional $100,000 per year. On line 39, the Education Partnerships expansion for fiscal year 2018 and 2019, the Red Wing, Northfield, and St. Cloud Promise neighborhoods would be held harmless at the fiscal year 2017 level and receive approximately $160,000 apiece beginning in fiscal year 2020. That would become a competitive grant program open to all Promise neighborhoods. Line 40, the Perpich Arts Education Outreach would be an appropriation of $200,000 per year to expand arts education. Line 41, the Turnaround Arts Program would be an appropriation of $370,000 in fiscal year 2018 and 2019 only for the integration of arts into curriculum. Line 42 is the Dyslexia Specialist at the Department of Education, $423,000 per fiscal year. Line 43 is the Teacher Licensure increased appropriation of approximately $3.4 million in the 18-19 biennium and $1.6 million in the TALES. The higher amount in the 18-19 biennium accounts for the IT structure that would need to be built to accommodate the tiered system. There's also additional administrative costs and the transfer from the Department of Education licensing staff over to the board, the new board. On line 44, the Minnesota State Academies would receive an operating adjustment of $400,000 per year. Line 45, the House and Senate agreed to close the Perpich Center. There would be some costs in fiscal year 2018 and 2019 associated with the sale of the property, as well as severance pay for employees in fiscal year 2019. And that would round out the spending in the Delete All Amendment. Down to line 50, there are some savings incorporated into the amendment. Line 50 is the voluntary pre-K repeal, as mentioned. This would be approximately $50.8 million for the 18-19 biennium. This does include the linked amounts. That would be for achievement and integration, aid, charter school lease aid, special education, long-term facilities maintenance, school nutrition programs, and an MDE administrative adjustment as well. Line 51, the civics education grants would not change in fiscal year 2018 and 2019, but they would be removed from the base in fiscal year 2020, so that would be a savings of $125,000 per year. Line 52, as Ms. Adrians mentioned earlier, the inter-district desegregation transportation would be a reduction of $861,000 per year, and this is a savings associated with the closure of the Crosswind School. Line 53, the Race to Reduce Water Conservation Grants, would receive the appropriation for fiscal year 2018. However, they would be taken out of the base, and this represents a savings of $307,000 per year beginning in fiscal year 2019. Line 54, the STAR-based STEM program, as Ms. Adrians mentioned earlier, this was a cancellation and reappropriation from fiscal year 2016 to 2018. As a result of that increased spending for fiscal year 2018, the program would not receive their fiscal year 2019 appropriation. However, because that appropriation is built into the base, they would continue to receive it in fiscal year 2020 and on. Line 55, the House and Senate agreed to reimbursing students for taking the ACT who were free and reduced price lunch students. This would be a savings of $1.5 million per year. Line 56 is a special education adjustment for programs that have closed. The cost would then not be carried forward into incoming years because special education is partially based on prior year costs. The closed programs would then not be carried forward, and this was a recommendation from the Department of Education. This represents savings, bless you, of $738,000 for the 18-19 biennium. Line 57, as a part of the Crosswinds closure, the building would be sold. That's estimated at approximately $10 million savings for fiscal year 2018 only. Line 58 is a Department of Education operating adjustment of $2.4 million per year. Line 59 is an operating adjustment associated with the closing of the Purbitch School to begin closing out some of those costs. This would be a one-time adjustment of $1.9 million for fiscal year 2018 only. And line 60 is also related to the Purbitch School closure. This represents the savings from closing the school. That would round out the savings. And on line 66, you will see some of the revenue changes. On line 66 is the cancellations from fiscal year 2017. This was the Starbase appropriation, the SMSU Special Education Teacher Program, the Starbase STEM Program, and then the revenue change for the Max Effort Early Repayment Aid Incentive to include Kelleher. This is approximately $1.4 million for fiscal year 2018 only. Line 67 is also related to the Purbitch closure. There would be some transfers from additional funds. I believe it's the gift fund and the special revenue fund. That would be $231,000 increased revenue for fiscal year 2019 only. And line 68, with the new tiered licensing system proposed in the Delete All Amendment, there would be some increased licensure revenues beginning in fiscal year 2019, estimated at approximately $38,000 per year. And with netting out the spending savings and revenue changes, that would put the Delete All Amendment at an increase of $303,482,000 for fiscal year 2018-2019 biennium and $424,379,000 for the TALES.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And Ms. Adrians, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yes, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a note that for the MDE operating adjustment that previously the House position had set out a number of things, and so in this proposal, I just wanted to point out that the operating adjustment is just a straight adjustment, and the agency has the ability to choose what it would want to do with that.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians.
Thank you. All right. And then I think next we would turn to discussion of the language changes. So, Mr. Strom, are you leading off with that?
Madam Chair, members, yes, I'd be glad to. We tend to coordinate with our Senate colleagues, so I hope they'll jump in here on article for article. And maybe I'll do one, and Ms. Perra can do article two, and we'll let the Senate vote from there. Article one is the general education article. There's a draft bill summary in your packets, and our instructions were just to highlight a few of the major issues. The rest should be rather evident from reading. The Conference Committee Delete All Amendment adopted the e-learning provisions. On page 2 of the bill summary, perhaps the next major change was the Conference Committee adopting the formula allowance that the fiscal analysts have described. That's a $91 per year increase for each year, so $91 over base the first year and $182 over the base the second year. That's a 1.5% increase. On the compensatory revenue, as Ms. Adrians pointed out, the compensatory is linked, and the concentration remains, but all of the increase over the baseline amount of compensatory revenue would be required to be used for the extended time purposes that were in the original House bill.
Yep.
Finally, Madam Chair, a final item in Article 1 that changed a bit during the negotiations. The pupil transportation adjustment became permanent, at a lower level of funding. So instead of it being a two-year provision, it's now an ongoing provision annually, and the amount of funding was set at 18.2% of the difference between the district's unfunded costs. The House position coming into conference was about 50% of the difference. So, Madam Chair, those are the major differences in Article 1.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Ms. Pera.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And member, I'm sorry, let me just suspend. If members have a question, please feel free to seek recognition. Ms. Pera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Article 2, Education Excellence, is the longest article in the bill, but I'll just hit the high points and I'm happy to answer questions. Sections 2, 11, 12, and 14 relate to Aaron's Law, which provides the sexual abuse prevention instruction for students and also for staff in schools. And allows schools to apply for funding for that instruction. Sections 5, 6, and 7 amend Section 120 B12, which relates to reading proficiently by the end of grade 3. Section 7 there encourages a district or school to develop a personal learning plan for students who are not reading at grade level. Section 8. Section 5 also relates to identifying students with dyslexia, which relates to Section 8, which provides for a dyslexia specialist. Moving on to Sections 20 and 21, those relate to unrequested leave of absence and negotiating. It removes language establishing a statutory plan for unrequested leave of absence and require school districts to negotiate those provisions with the exclusive representative of teachers. Section 26 modifies open enrollment lotteries by giving priority to a new group of students. And you can see the list there of which of what the new category is, but generally it relates to the municipality where the student lives and the school districts that operate buildings in the municipality. Section 30 encourages courses according to agreements that encourages schools to develop introduction to teaching courses for as concurrent enrollment courses. Section 30 and 31 both relate to PSEO, post-secondary enrollment options. Section 31 requires schools to allow students enrolled in PSEO access to school buildings and to technology. And Section 31 requires the school board to adopt the policy regarding weighted grade point averages. Section 38 requires a charter school authorizer to provide a letter to the school to distribute to families when the authorizer decides to withdraw, explaining the decision. Section 40, that again relates back to PSEO, and that allows a charter school to include students that participate in PSEO in the pupil count for generating lease aid. Section 42, that is a new section that establishes an alternative teacher preparation grant program for alternative teacher preparation programs. Sections 43, 44, and 45 modify the teacher shortage loan forgiveness program statute by modifying the definition of teacher shortage area. Generally, it expands eligibility to include teachers of color for that loan forgiveness. Section 46 expands the Northwest Regional Partnership Program. That was something the legislature passed last year to allow teachers to get the number of credits they need to teach courses at the high schools where high school students can obtain college credits. So this this provision expands that program to be statewide. Section 50 is the Innovation Zones pilot program that establishes a program that allows schools and school districts and charter zones to form innovation zones. As part of that, they can they obtain exemptions from various statutes and rules. Section 51, this is a modified version of a provision that was in both the House and Senate bills requiring the commissioner to submit the ESSA plan to the state legislature. The previous versions required the legislature to approve the plan before it could be implemented. That language is not in this provision. The commissioner is still required to submit the plan, and there are some provisions there relating to what has to be in the plan. But again, those are also modified from the original House language. Section 54 establishes rural career and technical education consortium grants. Section 55, those are the mental health grants for the intermediate schools. And Section 56 is the appropriations, which the fiscal analyst reviewed. And Section 57 is the repealer that relates back to the unrequested leave of absence provisions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Kara. Mr. Artisan?
Madam Chair, members, I'll skip to Article 4, which is a special education article. And I believe that these provisions that are proposed here for adoption by the in the amendment were, for the most part, carried in both bills and remain largely unchanged from the bills as brought to the Conference Committee. So unless you have questions, Madam Chair, I'd skip right to Article 5. Article 5 is the Facilities and Technology article. Many of the provisions here are conforming provisions related to the elimination of the Perpich Center, the closure of the Perpich Center. We'll draw your attention to Section 3, the provision relating to lead in school drinking water. I believe this is a slightly modified version of the House language as it came to conference. Again, many of the provisions here on page 14 relate to the Perpich closure. Skipping to page 15, section 15, disposition of the Crossland School and proceeds of sale. This is language that is largely consistent with the Senate language as it came to conference. The summary here hasn't yet been updated for the delete all draft. The amendment proposes to not appropriate the savings from this provision to TRA, but rather than make it generally available for other provisions proposed in the DE amendment. Section 17 is the primary section related to the Perpich Center closure. Section 19 is a combination of a few repealers from both bills. Paragraph A relates to the treatment of referendum revenue for attaching districts in the cases of voluntary or involuntary dissolutions. Paragraph B is a repealer related to the authority for the Perpich Center to operate the Crossland School. And finally, paragraph C repeals rules and statutes related to the Perpich Center effective June 30, 2018. That would conclude Article 5.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Articles 6 and 7 are both very short. You can fight for them.
I'm sure I can gladly take them. I think the House more than made up their fair share with Article 2. So.
Okay. I noticed everyone was rushing to take that one, too. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. Article 6 is the nutrition article. And I believe every, sections 1 and 2 and 5 were virtually identical in both the House and Senate provisions, and sections 3 and 4 relate to the proposed repeal of the voluntary pre-kindergarten program in this DE amendment. Article 7, libraries, is a provision that would authorize the Division of Library Services at MDE to give advice to school district charter school libraries. This was a governor's provision that is proposed for adoption here.
All right, thank you. And then
Was there anything else on Article 7? That was it. All right. Okay. Article 8. Ms. Pera, do you want to take that one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 8, several notable provisions that are not in Article 8, which is a difference from the House Article 8. There was an Office of Early Education Development in the House bill. A number of provisions were related to that. Those are not in the Delete All Amendment. Most of the sections in Article 8 relate to the repeal of voluntary pre-kindergarten program. So you can see that in Sections 1, 2, 3, 8, 9, and 12, of course, which is the repealer itself. Some of the other provisions relate to the early learning scholarships, including modifying the eligibility requirements and limiting the number of Pathway 2 scholarships to the number of scholarships is capped at the number granted in fiscal year 2017.
Madam.
Right. Thank you. The star-rated program, I think you should mention that.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. There is also Section 7, which postpones by 6 years the date by which a program must have a 3 or 4 star rating to accept an early learning scholarship.
Thank you, Ms. Pera. Representative Precia, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. We're capping the Pathway $2, but if a school wanted to use their existing school readiness to complement those dollars, that would be permissible. Is that correct? I'm just asking staff.
Ms. Farrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Fisher. There are no restrictions on how the school readiness funds can be used other than the existing school readiness statute.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Ms. Farrow, how did we arrive at 6 years?
Representative Murphy, that was the provision in the House bill, but I'll just let Ms. Pera confirm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murphy, yes, the House bill extended that date by 6 years. It was previously 2016, and in the new language, it'll be 2022.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Yeah. Okay. And just to add a little bit to that conversation, it's not that we do not want 3 and 4 star rated sites. It's we just have to allow more time for the build out. We already have a severe child care shortage in a lot of parts of the state, particularly rural parts of the state. And I've always been a strong advocate for parent aware and those 4-star sites, and I think it might be my language that we're repealing, actually. We're changing the date from 2016 to 2022, I think. So it's not that we're not interested in quality, it's that we have to allow the sites to ramp up, but in the meantime, we need to make sure that we have the child care.
Thank you. Yes, that's it. That's absolutely correct, and the rationale behind it. If there's no other questions, I think we'll go on to Article 9. Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, Article 9 is the Community Education and Prevention Article. In addition to the appropriations in that article, the Education Partnership Program language that the House brought to the Conference Committee is in this Delete All Amendment. That essentially establishes a framework for the Tier 1 and Tier 2 program providers. And for the first 2 years in fiscal years 18 and 19, the three Greater Minnesota providers are listed by name. And for years after that, they would be able to apply through a competitive process to receive funding under the provision.
All right. Any questions? Article 10.
Madam Chair and members, Article 10 is self-sufficiency in the lifelong learning article. Section 1 relates to ABE performance tracking measures, and I believe the remainder of the sections in this article relate to a general equivalency test or more specifically allowing the commissioner to select a test in that style. So sections 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 8 all relate to that proposal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Who wants to take state agencies?
Madam Chair, very Mr. quickly Chairman. On state agencies, the House provision coming into conference committee was to put all of the teacher licensure and administrator fees into an account in the special revenue fund. That proposal was adopted but delayed for 2 years. So that account would be created beginning in the next biennium, and from that period forward, the fees would go into the account and the boards would be funded out of that account. The appropriations section, when the fiscal analyst spoke, explained, I think, fairly well where those appropriations are at, and there's more detail on the tracking worksheet about that as well. I'm sure they'd be happy to answer any questions about the specific levels of any of those appropriations. And finally, Madam Chair, Article 12 is the forecast adjustment article, which was the same in both bills. And then one last word, the bill summary is a draft. This is the first time our Senate friends have gotten to see it since we put it together. So there are some lines that need to be clarified. So members should rely on the language in the bill and not in the bill summary for what's accurate.
All right. Thank you to all of the nonpartisan staff for all of your hard work and for explaining it to the conference committee and to the public who's with us and listening today. Any other questions from committee members at this time? Senator Nelson?
I thought Brett Murphy was going to have a question, but I wasn't sure there. So I just wanted to make one note. Which is that that has to do with the grow your own. We somehow missed that in our bill. So going forward, I just want to make sure that as we proceed, we do the language paragraph C on R86 77.21 and .3.26, and just to add some comment to that. Part of that grow your own, of course, is to encourage dual enrollment and concurrent enrollment, but particularly to develop the teacher preparation courses. So it goes right along with our, one, we have a teacher shortage, but also, of course, trying to encourage more teachers of color as well. And so having our grow your own grants also be available for the dual credit post-secondary course options in our schools. And right now there are none for teacher preparation. But, of course, it would be very helpful if we had those. So I just wanted to make sure that we got that on the record as well.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And I know I think we missed a line or two in there, and we'll make sure to take care of that. Representative Murphy.
It's a question about a position of in order at this time, or do you want to wait till after Commissioner talks?
If you're okay with it, I think I'd rather wait until after the Commissioner comes up. All right. So, all right, if there are no other questions from the Conference Committee members at this time, we'd be pleased to have Commissioner Casselius join us at the testifier table. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Representative Loon, Chair Loon, and Senator Nelson and members. Thank you so much for allowing me to come before you again. I've been in front of the committee several times talking about the funding of our schools and the fact that the target that we have was inadequate to meet the needs and demands of the schools. I know many of you agree with me on that. I was hoping we would see an improvement in the amount of money being put into our children's education. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. So that's my biggest disappointment here, is that we're really limited with what we can do to fortify our school budgets, avoid layoffs from our hardworking teachers in our schools, and raising of property taxes on our communities. I think it's going to be really damaging when school districts get these budgets. Outside of the formula increases, I do believe also that it is very disappointing that we are missing the opportunity to continue to invest in the 13,800 children waiting for school-based preschool, voluntary school-based preschool. We have 269 schools and charter schools and districts that have applied for voluntary pre-kindergarten and want to increase opportunities for preschool. We don't argue, anyone at this table, that preschool is important. And I'm disappointed to see that we don't invest in the capacity of our schools being able to build opportunities and link our programs and our standards from preschool all the way through grade 12 in our school districts and trust our teachers to do a good job with our earliest learners. So that's quite disappointing, as well as the freezing of Pathway 2. I know that there was an elimination of that Pathway 2, but the freezing of it, if we put any additional money into scholarships, restricts us then from giving any of that money to our schools when we have 821 kids waiting for scholarships right now, which would take about $12 million over the biennium, and 13,800 kids waiting for our school-based preschool programs. I think that that's imbalanced right now, and we don't even anticipate we're going to have a waiting list this fall for scholarships. So I just want to make sure that you know that when you're making these decisions and where we should be putting our money to reach the neediest children. Also, I think we missed an opportunity to fortify our school budgets with special ed and the unfunded costs from both the federal side and the state side around special ed costs, which we know are rising, and take money from the general fund. And again, we leave our school districts, you know, holding the bag on pensions. We know those are increasing, and that's also going to really impact our bottom lines. I don't like the changes to compensatory, even though you don't delink, and I appreciate that you're not delinking the money. Taking that, though, and then telling school districts how to spend that in alternative certification without any other vetting of these extended supports. I think we should have a deeper discussion around extended time and how that's used. A lot of time that's only used after school and after school programs when really we need to beef up the support for kids, especially our poorest kids during the school day, mentoring support, coaches, tutors, those kinds of things, additional class size reduction. Again, we missed an opportunity for American Indian kids. You know, I've come before this committee over and over and over again about our kids in our BIE schools. We can't leave them behind and meet our constitutional promise to our American Indian kids. They should not be getting half the resources that every other kid gets in Minnesota. Again, we're going to leave our poor kids who have to take the ACT. They have to just find their way to get to a regional center in our rural areas. High schools aren't required to give the test. Although I think some of them will because they see the value of it now, but then they'll be left with the cost of doing that. And so I think we need to really rethink our opportunities around equity if we expect every single kid to get a high school diploma, to be able to be ready for college. We're lowering the expectation here. And so I really want to compel the committee to rethink the small investment, $3 million, to ensure that the ACT is given at school. It is still a gateway for college for our kids, and they should all be able to take it without having to have a credit card to go to a computer and sign on, you know, or buying money up front. We don't do that for our AP and IB tests. Kids don't see a bill for AP and IB. Schools get reimbursed for that. Why are we going to make our kids, our poor kids who take the ACT, get reimbursed? The reading intervention plans is an unfunded mandate. If you want to do the reading intervention plans, and I know Senator Pratt, this was a really big push. You want our kids to be reading, and so do I. I think it's really important that they do reading intervention. I would say that the literacy aid that districts generate should then be used to create these plans. Direct the funding to the plans. Right now, they get this literacy aid. They can spend it however they want. But if you really want these reading intervention plans, there's going to have to be some money behind it, or it's just not going to be implemented well. The governor's been very clear. He does not want to see Perpich closed. And I know that the OLA came with a report, but he's re-fortified that board. They're in the process of hiring a new director. There's still a statewide need for the arts in this and in our state. And you've heard the folks bring that forward. Again, Crosswind School, I think we're getting into tricky territory with this conveyance and securing this money. We're getting kind of ahead of the game here with this conveyance, and we've never charged any other school district before for a school building. I think we're going to be double charging taxpayers for a school building we've already paid for, and no matter what, either any school district that comes and buys this building is going to have to raise property taxes or bond for it, or they're going to have to take money from their general fund to pay for it. It just doesn't make any sense to charge for that building to schools and takes money from our kids, whatever district it goes to. I think we need more time for that decision. I appreciate that you funded the deaf and blind school. I know we had some compelling testimony here, and I think that increase is needed to be funded, so I appreciate that. I think that we've invested with the Reading Corps for many, many years on this body, and they have a huge demand. And I know Senator Pratt and others on this committee have talked, really pushed for reading, and I think that, the investments aren't enough. If we had a bigger target, we could invest more in the Reading Corps. I appreciate the investments in the intermediate schools. I've been working with the superintendents of both districts, and that's just a really good investment in those intermediate schools. The agency cuts, though, are really, really going to damage our ability to support our schools, especially the cuts to our LEAPS Act, which is the support to our English language learners, our finance staff. Dr. Melcher gets up here all the time, and his division's been cut. You cut the School Safety and Technical Assistance Center, which is kids getting bullied. We're just today meeting with them about protecting students. And
Commissioner, I just wanted to correct, because all of those specified areas for reductions were removed from the bill. So
they're not in the reflective on the spreadsheet that I got. Well, so
perhaps that's an older spreadsheet, and we'll take a look. But those specified areas of reduction have been removed from the bill.
The way that I read
the DE amendment.
Okay, and the 4.8 million, has that been restored to overall operating budget cut?
No, the 4.8 million is a reduction in the operating budget, but there's no specifications on where those reductions would be made.
Madam Chair,
Senator Nelson.
We can speak to that a little bit. That was a Senate provision that we not line item reductions, and we could have Ms. Larson speak to that and where we'd see that on the spreadsheet.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Casillas, just to look at the language real quick on page 137 of the delete wait. All amendment.
Wait. Could you bring me the one page?
So if you look at page 137 of the delete everything amendment, in prior years, there were riders on the Department of Education's budget for school finance, LEAPS, and regional centers, and the Safety Tech Center. Those riders have been removed. It would be up to the discretion of the Department of Education where they would like to make the $2.447 million in cuts. So the delete all amendment does not specify where those cuts need to come from. It would just remove those riders. As a result, it may have been the Senate spreadsheet that you were looking at, because there are no riders on the bill for those line items. Those totals were rolled into the base, so that funding is still there. They're just not shown as line items, if that helps.
Okay, so I will relook at looking at a spreadsheet that I received on 331, at 331, and then there's one at 433. So I'll look at those, but whether it's 6 million, which would have been really devastating, or 4.89 million, it's still incredibly devastating to the agency to take those kinds of cuts on top of the cuts that we have to make 15 FTEs because of the contracts that were settled here by this body and increases in staff salaries and benefits. And so we are going to see cuts of just 15 if we don't even get the base FTEs. And then add on top of that $4.89 million. It's just too much. We will not be able to sustain that and provide good services. And I hope that my colleagues, superintendents and school boards will get up here and talk about the past 6 years and the value that we bring to them with our regional centers out to our rural schools around implementation of standards, about professional development for teachers, supporting our business center, auditing our schools. We put out a $9 billion budget every year, and to the nickel. And thank goodness for Dr. Melcher and other professionals at the agency who do this work for our schools. And so I can't say enough how important this is. And I don't think I've ever gotten up here and really talked this much about my agency and how much I appreciate the professionals there and value their work. And I hope that my colleagues will get up here and echo that as well. And then just finally, I want to talk to a few policy, and I will sit down because I'll have plenty of time to talk with you in further negotiations. But I want to just, for the record, talk a little bit about ESSA. I appreciate Representative Erickson taking out the approval and the submission. We also agreed to do two hearings to this body before submission of that. It's our intent to work collaboratively with this body. There's just one very specific policy on Subdivision 3. It says that the academic indicator is the indicators has to be an academic indicator. By federal law, we need to have a fifth indicator of school quality that's non-academic. So just to comply with federal law, we have to have both academic and non-academic indicators. So that's just a big policy change that would need to change. So I'll leave my comments at that and take any questions that you have now for that, and then I'll review the agency changes from the 1 hour of the one bill that, tracking that I got to the next.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just some clarification on the scholarships. I might have misunderstood you. I'm not sure that I heard you right, but the Pathway 2s are not, those are the scholarships that go to a site, are not eliminated in this bill. However, the new additional dollars do not go to Pathway 2s. They go to Pathway 1, which is where the parent determines that best setting. But I thought I heard you say that Pathway 2s could not be used at school sites, and I do not believe that's correct. I think we had further clarification of that earlier. So the Pathway 1s could be used at a school site if the parents chose to. So I just wanted to make sure the record accurately reflected that, and I might have misunderstood you.
Yeah. Senator Nelson, I think what I was saying, Madam Chair, thank you. I think what I was saying is that Pathway 2s, they don't just go to schools, by the way. There are 122 private child care providers that get it, and I think 122 Head Starts or something like that. And so there are both school, there's Head Start, there's private, and there's actually 7 family caregivers who have Pathway 2 scholarships. So I'm happy that they will get those replaced, that they'll still be able to be grandfathered into the program the way that I read it. But I think that it's problematic without having voluntary preschool that we wouldn't have, outside of additional money to school readiness, any way to invest in high-quality voluntary pre-kindergarten for students in the future. So that's what I was referring to.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
So just to clarify, though, so of all the sites that currently have Pathway $2, all of those sites are able to take Pathway 1 or parent choice if the parent so chooses.
Right.
I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Commissioner, one thing that we should talk, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, one thing we should talk about then, as we've also, I've been notified by my team that we've already done the awards for 17 and 18. So they, because we were on a 2-year cycle on those. So I just wanted, we'll just have to talk about how that impacts future funding.
Representative Krishna.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. Could you just walk me through, so I understand, you mentioned the 13,800 students.
Yeah.
What is that comprised of? Is that the whole universe of preschoolers?
I wish.
So.
Madam Chair, Representative Krishna, what it is we had 269 school districts and charters who applied for pre-kindergarten, voluntary pre-kindergarten, and within that, they're asking, there's 13,800 slots that they're asking to fill with students. And that's in every county. So we would have voluntary pre-kindergarten in every single county if we were able to fund those.
Representative Krishna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's 269 students, that's the total of those 269 districts.
And charters.
And charters. But that's 13,800 kids in totality. It's not necessarily 13,800 kids that could be disadvantaged or at need. We don't know that. Is that correct?
Commissioner. Madam Chair, Representative Krishna, we know that there 9,100 of them are from rural Minnesota and they're 44% poverty. We know that there are 500 from Minneapolis and St. Paul. There are like 3,600 that are suburban, and I think there are, I want to say, like 167 slots that are charter. I don't know my charter number exactly. The reason that the poverty has gone down is because Minneapolis and St. Paul only have 500 of those slots because of the way that we have the distribution from the 10% in the Minneapolis-St. Paul region, the 41% like suburban, 7% charter, and the other 47 percent in rural. But the big number that you should know is that 9,100 of those new slots, of that 13,800, are the rural schools asking for it. And when I talked to Fred Nolan, he said that this has been on their legislative agenda, having pre-kindergarten.
Representative Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm really just trying to understand. So you're saying 9,100, their biggest identifiers at their rural. What we don't know is of those 9,100, how many of those are already being served perhaps at home or through other means? And do we know how many of them really need preschool to make sure they're kindergarten ready? What I'm hearing is they're just rural.
Madam Chair, Representative Krishna, I would say, I shared with you that 44% on average are from poverty, from just that's the poverty average. But what we shouldn't do is say that they don't need it, because many times in our rural areas they lack access to the high quality child care. They just don't have a child care center. They might only have Head Start and then they wouldn't qualify for it. So I think that absolutely they need it. I think if school districts didn't need it, they wouldn't have applied for it, or if they couldn't have had the facility for it, they wouldn't have applied for it. So I absolutely believe there's definitely a need for it. Just about half of the kids that are going in rural are of high poverty. But, you know, remember that middle class people struggle too, and especially in our rural areas where they lack access. So you kind of give up the poverty a little bit because you're increasing access for our rural kids.
So, Krishna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's fine, and I understand all that. But I mean, you know, in all the years that I've spent in early childhood and doing, I mean, there's a difference between a kid that can read and a kid that cannot read, and a kid that has language skills, a kid that has parents at home that are reading to them, and that is not just delineated by poverty. I came from a very poor background where my mother read to me.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, my question, I would argue, because of what my parents and grandparents and our family did, I was able to bypass not needing a quality preschool because it was already happening. So my point is, I think the delineators here and just saying that they're rural may not be the best approach. I understand where you're going, but I think we need to target this a little bit differently, but so be it.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, you know, just a couple of points. And one, while we're hot on the topic with Representative Crescia, you know, I've talked to a number of superintendents who have said, we really don't want voluntary pre-K. We really want money on the formula. And I appreciate what the chairs have done to at least hold those school districts harmless, allow them to continue their programs with fewer constraints and mandates on the money. I think, Commissioner, I would suggest you go back and look at the amended language for the third grade reading. We worked very hard to listen to stakeholders and make it so it's not a mandate. And so I hope you'll relook at that language, and I'm happy to talk if you've still got any concerns. But I think, you know, what's most disappointing to me is that the governor didn't engage in negotiations on this bill. He originally called for three-way targets to be finished by last Friday, and we ended up with joint targets. You know, House and Senate were able to get together. But no one from the governor's office really had the authority to start negotiating budget targets. If I recall, when we asked you, you said you were a resource.
No. Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, that is not the right characterization. One, I have been before this body testifying on what the governor's priorities were countless times. I have also had my staff meeting with your staff on language, and I've met with all the chairs multiple times. You have my cell number. I have been available. And to say that we haven't been negotiating these bills and all the policy is just not accurate, Senator Pratt. And I'm not saying that it's an unfunded mandate in a negative way. I'm not saying that the reading plans aren't important. And my staff worked with you on it, so I don't have any problem with the policy language. You know, what I'm saying is that we have a big amount of money called literacy aid that just goes to school districts, and it's not directed to anything. But we have a lot that we're asking them to do around district literacy plans. We're asking them to ensure kids are reading by third grade. We're asking them to meet with parents. We're asking them now to develop these plans. That takes a lot of time, a lot of teacher time. And we can't pretend that it doesn't take time to develop those plans if they're going to be meaningful. So if there's going to be plans, then let's fund it. And if it's not going to be new money because we don't have a good enough target, well, then let's make sure then that the money that we have addressed for literacy is actually spent on literacy. That's why I brought that up.
Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I would suggest you go back and just have your staff relook at the amended language in the DE, because I believe we've taken it away from a mandate. But I will say, and Commissioner, your staff has been, you and your staff have been very helpful in talking through a number of the policy issues. I think, again, my frustration when we talk about the money and we talk about a 1.5% increase, that the governor hasn't been engaged on the budget side of the ledger.
Right.
And I think that's what's frustrating, where now we have joint targets where, in all honesty, the governor had suggested by April 28th and the legislature was open to having three-way targets by then.
Madam Chair, Senator Schatt, with all respect, the governor came with $713 million for education. He gave his target. He said what he wanted to get to. And we got $300 million here. It's woefully inadequate for what needs to happen for our kids and for our teachers. And I don't even know how to get the target higher and negotiate that higher when both bodies are coming with $300 million. Where is the other, just to do the 2%, and I heard great commitment from both chairs and all the body that we should do 2%. That's $371 million. So how do you even get to 371 to do the 2%, which everybody was committed to doing, and we're still at 300? So what's to negotiate if we can't even get to the 2% we're all agreeing on? So I think that we, you know, we need a bigger target from both caucuses and both bodies, and the governor will meet you at the higher target because he's put out a $7 and $13 million target for education. And I think that's you know, where he's at. And hopefully the leadership will get together and come up with a bigger target for our kids because we're all depending on it. We're all getting older. And our demographics are shifting much faster. And we know who's stuck in the achievement gap, and we're not doing anything about that in this bill. And I know that my language is strong, and I apologize for that ahead of time. But I just really feel compelled to tell this body that we have got to do better for our kids than what we're doing in this bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner, and I can appreciate that. And I've been through a couple of budget cycles where you have Senate targets, House targets. Everybody seems to come together somewhere in the middle. We haven't had that from the governor. We had the governor's proposal, but we haven't had the governor really come in and set that third target. And in fact, he said so in the media that he's not going to engage until at least the House and Senate get together. And I think that's unfortunate because we probably could have come together. Had we, you know, had someone at the governor's office been there working on a compromise target. Now, you know, I'm pleased to see that Senator Nelson and Representative Loon were able to come up from the House target and meet and somewhat exceed what the Senate target was before, but to say that the governor put out a dollar amount and that was it, it's never worked like that in the two previous budget cycles that I've been at. He's stated so in the media, and I'm just saying we're extending this timeline and we're going through all these. If there are things that are that important to the governor, then he should have been at the table working on the budget side of it. Like I say, I appreciate you working on the policy, but just to say that he's put out his budget proposal, and that's his target, and he's not moving from it. We could come up with $350 million. Is the governor going to come down from $700 then? If what you're saying is true, all we need to do is put out a higher target, and he'll meet us. I guess I don't want to belabor the point. I think we're going round and round, but
yeah, I mean, and I appreciate it, Madam Chair, Senator Pratt. I appreciate all of the work, and we've met quite extensively on budget items as well, not just policy. So we have negotiated on those things as well. Maybe if, you know, the leaders can get together and do come to the middle. I mean, that's a bigger increase than $300 million. But nobody in either body has come to the governor with a middle proposal. I don't think not on education. So, and I'm not sure where they're at on all the other bills. But I can't, you know. I'll leave that for him to talk. I think we'll just continue to go back and forth, and we have different opinions on that.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, your staff has worked well with the Senate and me and my staff, and I want to thank you for that. I do want to add that I am a bit disappointed that we did not get those three-way targets. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think we would be in a better place now if we had. But the point is, we are where we are today, and the Senate and the House do have a joint target. We're thankful that we were able to increase the target from either the House or the midpoint target and even a little bit above what our Senate target was. But I do look forward to working with the governor, and I do think our bills will get better. I do want to also note that I think it's a real success in Minnesota that there is such talk and great public awareness and knowledge that what happens before kids get to kindergarten is very important. And so I think that's something, while there's going to be some tussle back and forth as we work these things out, I do think we need to stand up and say, you know what, it's great that Minnesota is known as a state across this nation that is very innovative in how it, one, makes sure that four-year-olds receive high-quality preschool, whether it be at home or down the street at a family child care, or if it's in a church facility or a non-profit child care or a for-profit child care. We have a lot of options in Minnesota. And the good news is that we realize as a state, by and large, that kids need to be ready for kindergarten when they get there. So I think we should celebrate that.
Yep.
And I think the governor has done a lot to make that to make that as a platform. Going forward, though, however, I hope we also realize that the Minnesota model of early learning is truly being touted across the nation, and it's that mixed delivery model where we don't have just voluntary pre-K as part of the K-12 system, a 14th grade, but what we're having, what works in Minnesota and what is really being touted across the nation is that model where we are targeting resources on kids that are most at need, who wouldn't get that high-quality preschool otherwise. And we are giving parents choice about where's the best way to receive that high-quality preschool. And it could be Head Start.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be in the public schools. It could be at the daycare. It could be at a family child care. So I think it's important as we go forward that we celebrate our successes and then we continue to work and move towards what's working, which is really, as I said, our Minnesota model of early learning. And it's nationally known. It's being touted nationwide. And I hope that as we move forward, we continue with that highly successful model. And I want to make sure that as we talk about voluntary pre-K, we're realizing that there are other avenues as well.
Commissioner. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, thank you for that. The governor has been quite a leader in early learning, and he has said it's all of the above. It's all of the above. And he has demonstrated that in his budgets, the past six budgets. And so,
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
So, and just a final comment on that. I think you are so right about that. But I worry that your comments about the numbers of students who were waiting for VPK was like that was their only choice. And so my comments are to indicate that there are many choices, not just one. So we have to look at those numbers in a holistic sense, not just that it's just they're all waiting for VPK. There could be other options, too.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, that is true. And if, you know, the Senate and the House want to come with $175 million to cover the students who are waiting, then we can figure out how that distribution happens, school-based and otherwise. You have already money in the bill for scholarships.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy, did you have a question you wanted to ask now?
Not.
Not yet. Okay. Representative Creesha, do you have another question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner. I was just listening, and I want to set the policy aside for a second. I mean, there isn't anybody here that hasn't championed good education initiatives. And I appreciate the governor. He has stood up, and he has certainly been a champion for education, as well as many people in the House and the Senate. I just want to make sure I clarify a couple remarks that I heard. So one of the things was, and I don't know if it was intended how I heard it, but you said if we were to come to a number of 2 and 2, the governor, because of where he started, he would meet us there. So are you suggesting that if we did get to 360 or 365, the governor would say, yeah, that number works?
Commissioner.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Creesha, it takes $371 million to do 2 and 2.
So I'll say 371. I could do that.
And I'm not able to negotiate for the governor without agreed upon targets on the whole scheme of all of his bills. And I know that he wants to do 2 and 2, but I think that would be a starting place to get the 2 and 2. And then everything else, he's got $40 million on special ed. He's got $68 million on the pensions. He's got $175 million on preschool. I know there's stuff you want to do in the bill, so I would say that the target has to be much higher. I was saying, you know, Senator Pratt said halfway between 713 and 300 is not 371.
So just to follow up, and I think this is where the public gets frustrated. I mean, from those comments, what the suggestion is that the governor has started way high, knowing that he's going to come down, but yet painting the legislature in a box saying, oh, you started too low, you don't care about kids, but hopefully you'll come up. And what we really haven't gotten to is what is the need and what is the number that's acceptable. In fact, what we're hearing is I have the better position, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying this as, a, as an I position statement, but we'll just come out really high and at some point we'll work that's down. But that's what I'm hearing.
No, what you're hearing is what the real need is. $713 million is the real need. We have really 13,800 kids really waiting for preschool. We have schools depending on that money. We really need $371 million. We need $683 million to deal with the special ed cross-subsidy, but we've only asked for $40. We really do need $68 million to deal with the pensions. This is not made up numbers. We came with a really slim budget. We don't have a lot of small projects that we are funding in the governor's budget. We are funding the core workings of the school district so they don't have to make cuts, raise class sizes, and raise property taxes. So there's nothing in the governor's budget that's fluff. It is really the majority of his budget is real kids waiting, real teachers needing relief, pension relief, and school districts not needing to hold that, and real investments in the cross-subsidy. Growing special ed costs are huge. Honestly, we came with just a few things this year because we need those core budgets fortified. They really need it. They really do.
Representative Christian?
If we were to put the next dollar in, should it go to the agency's 4.9 shortfall or to schools?
Commissioner, I always say every dollar should go to children.
No,
and I don't think that's a fair question in a $1.6 billion surplus.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Commissioner, I have just a couple, and I want to thank you. I really do want to thank you. You've been here, I think, for almost all of our committee hearings. You've been an active participant. We have had a number of meetings. Your staff has been great giving us, and poor Mr. Uni, last he was here, we sent him off with a pretty long list of things, information-wise, that we requested, and he's been getting them back to us. So I do appreciate that very much, and our rapport, and what I believe is friendship as well. So thank you for that, and our commitment to Minnesota's children. You know, I just a couple of things I want to ask about, and I think there is no doubt in my mind that all of our collectively, but I'm speaking you and I here specifically, our commitment to doing the best we can for Minnesota's children is deep and strong, and we share that. And talking about the achievement gap and concerns about this bill doing nothing about the achievement gap, and, you know, I think what concerns me, and I'm going to talk specifically about the BPK versus the approach we're taking in the bill, is I almost think it's the opposite. I mean, we have a difference here between, as a mixed delivery system that Senator Nelson very eloquently talked about, of really serving the poorest, neediest, highest-risk children through that mixed delivery versus a school-based voluntary pre-K program that is not exclusively devoted to those poor children in highest risk. Now, I do know with the current program, I think it was about, this is a figure from a while back that I saw when you had testified earlier this year, about 78% of the children would fall into that category. But the proposed expansion in the governor's budget to, I think, 269 different school districts and sites, when you suss out all the numbers, about 54% of those children would be from those poor families. And so we would be investing a lot of money into children that wouldn't fall into necessarily that high-risk, high-need category. And I think that is where kind of the nugget of my concern is. Mr. Uni sent some information over to Senator Nelson and I today about, I have been asking about how many of the children currently served in the current sites and the VBK, those 74 school districts and some charters, were not being served before in a program. And
from the information he received, I received from him, 54 of those districts served more four-year-olds than they did the year before. So some of them aren't serving more. And 14 of those did not serve any more children than they did the year before they got the BPK money. And, again, I won't go through all the details of what he sent, but, you know, a significant portion of those sites, 49 of them, reduced contributions they received from other funding sources and replaced that with the VPK money. So we just swapped out money that schools were already expending in early childhood for this new VPK money. And I think that's what troubles me most of all. When we have very needy, poor children who desperately need quality early childhood programs and education to be ready for kindergarten, which is the goal, which is narrowing the achievement gap, and we allowed funding to move forward that wasn't necessarily serving more children, was basically supplanting funds that were already being used for that purpose. I have other questions, too. I think in some cases the children in the VPK were also being given also Pathway 2 scholarships as well in those same sites. So there are a lot of questions about whether or not that approach serves the best interests of the children in the state of Minnesota who need this. I don't question the fact that if the signal is put out that we are going to offer money to school districts to have four-year-old preschool programs for a certain number of slots available at no cost to families, they'll have no problem filling those. I don't question that. The question is this truly a tool for closing the achievement gap? Absolutely. If we are not narrowing that focus to those high-risk, high-return kids, again, the kids who benefit the most and show the most benefit from receiving that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, you know, the best that I can do to describe the difference in our opinion. It is not a difference in commitment to kids, mm-hmm. and I think we both know that. It's a different of approach and a different in purpose and, again, closing the achievement gap. So I really hope as we move forward in this process, again, we've talked a lot about engaging the governor, whether it takes the governor it will take the governor moving forward to meet with our leaders, House and Senate, to get targets where everybody can live with them. We know that's not just our committee, probably others as well. But I hope once that happens, it will be you at the table with this conference committee, you empowered by the governor, to then take that target and work with us to create a bill that is in the best interest of children, not only the early little learners we need to reach, but our K-12 system and beyond. Do you think that is how the process could move forward once those targets are established?
Madam Chair, that's my understanding, is that as soon as there are targets, we will be able to negotiate with the chairs and get these bills to the governor in a way that we can all move forward and it's in the best interest with what we have. I think the biggest issue is getting a healthier target. So that we can do some things that are going to help our kids and help our teachers and schools.
Thank you. Other questions?
Could I just make one comment?
Yes,
Madam Chair, on the VPK, I just want to clarify that it has been a mixed delivery system that the governor supported over all of these years. And there is a real need out there for school-based. It is high quality. And the reason that the poverty isn't there, and I was trying to explain this to Representative Precious, because 9,100 of the kids, it's rural poverty. That's not the same as concentrated urban poverty. And so just so you understand that the difference in why the poverty levels are a little bit different this year than they were in previous years. And then Minneapolis and St. Paul didn't ask for as much expansion. So if there were ways that you wanted to target the VPK, that would just be the swipe of a pen to say that we're going to not distribute these out to rural communities or out to the suburban communities that are wealthier. They're going to first go to kids that are in poverty. And that's one way you could solve this. And then we could take care of all the waiting lists on Head Start, we could take care of all of the waiting lists for our poor kids, and we could fund schools based just on poor kids. But if they offer a program, then all kids could come. But the poor kids were the ones who'd get the scholarship or the VPK funding.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. I think, you know, I'm encouraged by that discussion about kind of refocusing, if we would, on those poorest children, because I think, you know, the discussion on access in the rural areas is an issue, but it's not the same issue. I think there's an access of maybe a lack of access to childcare or preschool, and then there's an achievement gap issue, and those are two separate things, two important things, but they're not always the same thing. So I'm gonna ask you one last question on this, and I'm asking it a little bit different way. If, and I think we would enjoy this, if we could sit down and with Senator Nelson and you and I guess we could have the whole conference committee there if we wish, but if we could sit down and negotiate a bill and a target for education that you were satisfied with, could you take that to the governor and he would approve that so we could just get this process started and complete it? Is that something we could do?
Madam Chair, I don't know how you guys could. It's a lot of money you're going to have to come up with. I mean, I don't know. You're going to have to lessen money in the tax bill and lessen money on all the other things. I mean, it's just, I don't know. You have to find the money to put into education in your two houses. And I can't sit there and say, oh, yeah, I don't know all these other bills and where you're going to find the money. If you come and you say you have $600 million for education, I'd be glad to bring that back to the governor. You know, I'd be glad to bring back, you know, any amount that you guys want to bring back to him, but I'm not the governor. I can't make those decisions, and I don't think you can make those decisions for your leadership either, I don't think. So there's all these other provisions and all these other bills, you know, DHS bill and all the other things. I just don't have the authority to do that, but I sure hope that there's a bigger target that's talked about in education and in the other areas.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, having visited with you and Representative Loon and knowing, I think the three of us could actually put together that bill that would be great for all Minnesota kids and education. But we do have some work to do within our own groups as well. But certainly I think there's no doubt that there's a great support here to make sure that we have great schools. And we cannot forget to focus on the outcomes and the student achievement. So while dollars are necessary, it always worries me when all of our discussion is just around dollars. Mm-hmm. Kids do not succeed based upon the number of dollars that are there. They succeed based upon what happens. And are they reading on grade level? Are they getting the basic math that they need? Are they doing algebra by eighth grade? So it's very important that we always focus on the students, we focus on their outcomes, and I have the greatest confidence that we have people in this room that are very dedicated to that. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to us moving forward to the next step of negotiating to make the bill that we have today better. Yeah. And I'm sure that we can.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And well said, Senator Nelson. I think one thing I often say out in my district talking about education, I said, and dollars are important. Anyone who has a child knows that they do not come cheap. And you have to invest and take care of them. But only measuring sort of if you measured parenting by dollars and how much you spend, that wouldn't be the best measure of who's a good parent. And education also, it matters with what you do with the dollars you have. Well said. Representative Bennett, you had a question, and then Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to just share an observation with everybody here, including the Commissioner, on what I've seen happen in one of my own communities in Albert Lea with the voluntary pre-K. And I've kind of piggybacking on the idea that we really want to target and measure and look for shrinking that achievement gap. And Representative Prechon and some of the others have chairs have also spoken about that, but I've spoken to our teachers in our public school. We have two voluntary pre-K sites in Albert Lea, two different schools. I've spoken to those teachers, or some of them, excuse me, and our superintendent. I've also gone out and spoken to some of our quality early childhood programs that are outside of the school district. We have two parent-aware, four-star rated programs in Albert Lea, in addition to other programs that are also affected. And first of all, I want to say that the teachers in our school district have done a great job implementing the voluntary pre-K, and I know that you had, were you there, Commissioner?
I was. Yeah. It was wonderful.
And thank you for visiting. I wish I could have come at the same time. I had commitments up here, but I commend them. They're doing a great job. But in speaking to the other early childhood providers there, what happened with our voluntary pre-K program is one of those sites actually lost what would be amounting to a full classroom of students that shifted over to our voluntary pre-K. The other site lost a half a classroom. And so what I'm seeing is out of those two classrooms for the voluntary pre-K is we are shifting students. We are not reaching more students and reaching them deeper, and that's what I want to see, because I see research showing that that is what is needed to close that achievement gap. So I think these are discussions we need to have, again, is what is the best way to target the students to close the achievement gap. I appreciate that our commissioner and our governor and our chairs and everybody on this committee has that in sight, and I'm really confident that we can come upon an agreement that's going to work for our kids, because I know we all have that in mind, is what's best for our kids. So thank you, everybody, for your work. But I do want us to look at these things and make sure that we're really getting to those kids that need it.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner, for being here. Our conversation is focused mostly on funding and most recently our early learners. But we have a lot of policy in this bill, some of it new. Would you comment on any of that from your perspective and what advantages you might see in it, or if you have a concern, would you share that, please? Because we're going to negotiate both funding and policy.
Commissioner. Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, as you know, the bill just came out right before committee, and I was in the School Safety Technical Assistance Committee, so I didn't have a chance to read a lot of the policy. When we were working on the policy with Senator Pratt and yourself, we were able to work through a lot of the policy already. So outside of the items that I highlighted, the one provision that is just in contradiction to federal law, there's a few other small policy items in there. There's also the big policy item of ULE, which is a much larger policy discussion. I think that we've worked out most of the policy. There's just a few things that we would need to continue to work on and massage. And then, of course, we took the teacher licensure out, and we're working that separately. So you should have gotten some information on some of the feedback on that from the DOSH today. If you haven't gotten it yet, it's coming. I just really have appreciated working with both chairs and my team on the policy side. It's really been great. And both chairs with the finance as well. We've been able to work on, although we were very restrained with what we could do with the budget targets that we have.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for the memo from DOSH today on the teacher licensure. I'm sure Senator Pratt and I will be going through that very carefully. I have already started, and so I appreciate that. I just wanted you to understand on the ESSA provision that, please know that we as policy members want to be involved always in setting a state plan for the federal accountability. Absolutely. And that we're very concerned that it be one plan, and that because we have the world's best workforce, and, we've been holding school districts to that, and charters as well, for a number of years now, that we want to ensure that that state plan is going to reflect on Minnesota's desire to close the achievement gap and to use the world's best workforce and the components of it to move in that direction. So please know that that's our motivation, and it's not, to interfere with what you're doing, but to work with you as policymakers. In regard to LIFO, I think that we want you to understand how important it is to us that always we have the best qualified teachers, the greatest teachers in our classroom, and when it comes to a school district having to do layoffs that we are seeing, and we just experienced that somewhat in Minneapolis, that we're losing some of those newer teachers, younger teachers, teachers of color, American Indian teachers, and we want to hold on to that. So we hope that you and the governor will consider very carefully this very modest LIFO provision that we have in the bill. In regard to Purpich, I know there was a press conference today or a gathering. We want you to think carefully, and I guess when I say we, it's probably Representative Lunan and I, because we brought forth the closure of Purpich. But we want you to think very carefully and convey to the governor how important it is that if we're going to have a Center for Arts Education in Minnesota, it has to compete at the same level that the top arts high schools, for example, are in the nation, and we're not finding that.
Absolutely.
And there is grave concern on my part, and I won't speak for Representative Bruin on this, that we have failed as a small agency, and I guess it's not under the legislature, so I'll say you, because Purpich Center for the Arts Education is a small agency. We appropriate dollars, but more than the appropriation of the dollars, we want a product that is for the whole child who attends there. And so whether it's academics, arts, or the fact that they live in a residence, we have to be concerned about that whole child. And we are missing out on that based on what I have learned over the last several years in receiving information and talking to folks who are associated with Purpich. So please know that, you know, our concern is for the students and for the parents who send their students to Purpich. Aside from that, I think Senator Pratt has worked hard, and he worked hard with me to hone in the reading interventions that he is especially concerned about and I support. And we think we arrived at language that really is going to serve our school districts well. So with that said, Madam Chair, I think that we'll continue to talk policy. And again, thank you for what you sent on the licensure, because that is very important as we move forward on that.
Commissioner. Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I feel your urgency and your passion around Purpich. As you know, it is an independent agency from the department, so we have no authority. They have a board that is appointed. The governor has restructured that board. They are in the process of hiring a new leader for the school, and I think that they have some really talented candidates. I know that a few current superintendents have told me that they've applied for it, and they're outstanding candidates. I don't know if they've selected anybody yet. So I have a lot of goodwill that I think that the school is going to get back on its feet. So and hopefully you all will give them the chance to do that.
Thank you. Other final questions or comments? Other Commissioner, Senator Wigger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't have a question to the Commissioner other than I agree with everything she said. But just a couple of comments. We have less than $500, and you have accomplished what you needed to do, and I appreciate all the effort that you as the chairs have done to reach a consensus. This will pass as an amendment. I think there's a lot of work to do yet for the reasons that the commissioner said, but there's going from 300 million to 303. That is some progress, but we do need to make more. And I know that you want more, and I would assume that will unfold over the next several days. It has to. And we're committed to that. So I see that the big issue with the formula yet. Early education, we all want students ready for K, and we have different perspectives on it. I like a mixed delivery system, and I support scholarships, but I strongly support the voluntary pre-K 4, and parents do as well. And you'll find that parents will move to districts that offer that type of a program, just as they did for kindergarten. And when, and I appreciate that you did this study where you got some information as to the amount of students that have been impacted by the new program. Well, I would suspect that some school districts were just cross-subsidizing to make that available because of the heavy demand for four-year-olds, just as they did for kindergarten when they didn't have full funding because parents were moving out of the district. So districts probably just found a steady, reliable funding stream. So let's get the formula up. I know we'll try. That's a higher level, as we know, but I'm reasonably optimistic it'll happen. Let's work out a reasonable compromise on the early educational opportunities. There's many good things that you've mentioned already for the mental health services and the intermediates. Thanks for your leadership, Representative Loon, on that. And I know how much in my area in 916, how they appreciate that. The career tech initiatives, et cetera, I won't go through them all, but there's a lot of good things in here. There's some policy items, whether it's on the purpose, the LIFO, et cetera. They got to be worked out and discussed more. I offer myself whatever way I can be. I realize I'm a member of the minority, but still very interested in helping and whatever I can do.
Thank you, Senator Wieger, and I think, you know, it doesn't matter that you're a member of a minority. You're a longstanding member of the legislature, and you bring years of experience and knowledge and good advice. So I think we're open to that advice and counsel and suggestions and willing to work with us from all comers, all members and senators. So appreciate that very much. Other comments or questions for the commissioner? All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
And I'm going to move move the DE2 amendment, move adoption of the DE2 amendment. Representative Murphy, I know you have wanted to ask a question or have a dialogue, so is now the right time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I have two questions.
Yes.
On the little sheet. For the line 71 with the target balance in fiscal year 1819 and fiscal year 2021, those numbers, the 303 and the 424, how do they fit with the numbers under there that says target 303 and 362?
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I will have our fiscal analyst, Ms. Adrians, address that.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, in the tails, they don't.
By 61,965?
Your math is very good. So I think that the hope is that there can be some work done on the TAILS target. It's very difficult when you have the formula increase because it increases quite a bit in the TAILS. So that causes the spending to increase quite a bit. And then in terms of the target, we're just about right on. It's nice sometimes not to be too exact just because numbers change a bit from time to time, depending on just as we finesse the language and get everything much more accurate. So we feel pretty right on with the 18-19 target.
Okay. And I appreciate that, and I just thought I would like to bring that up. But my second question, Madam Chair, is
Representative Murphy.
Question for Senator Nelson. And I guess I'm pretty okay with the major decisions that have been made. I was so hoping the Senate's position would prevail for the Purpich School. And I'm really interested in what arguments were used that made the Senate accept the House position. Although I totally agree with everything that Representative Erickson expressed to the commissioner about the whole student and
and where we're at. But I especially thought that the same position was, even if they wavered a little bit, it would be not now, but a little bit later. But here we are. And so if you could sure. Tell me what really persuaded you at this time. Was it just the numbers that you got with the money, new money? Or was it what was expressed?
Representative Murphy, I agree with you 100%. I definitely like the Senate proposal better. And I think you'd be a great senator, by the way. But, wait a minute. I don't know who your senator is.
I was an adult in 1985.
I mean, yeah. Madam Chair, I'm not exactly sure who your senator is, so I've got to be careful of that. But I do appreciate your support of the Senate position. And as in all things, you have to negotiate. And let me just say there was one thing, and this kind of gets to your first question, too, and about the tails and such. There was one item that the Senate would not negotiate on. We refused to move backwards on our per-pupil formula increase. We don't think 1.5 is enough, but that's what we've got, working with the numbers that we had. And we refused. That was a line in the sand. The Senate would not move backwards on that position. So you can kind of use all of those things as you look at the tails and the perfect center and all of that. But just know that that was the Senate line in the sand. We were not going to move backwards on that formula. And so some other things had to change a bit.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Seeing no other comments, I would renew my motion and move adoption of the DE2 amendment to House File 890. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Right. DE amendment has been adopted, and with that, there's no other business for today. And I'm sorry, Senator Wieger.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. What's next?
I think the best I could say is stay tuned, Senator Wieger.
Getting used to that.
All right. With that, thank you, committee members, and the committee is adjourned.